which is number 6, the local safeguarding adult board annual report.
Margaret and Emma.
And Margaret is here, I'm told. Sorry?
Yes.
Do you want to come and join us at a suitable seat where there's a microphone? That might be helpful. You could be Kathy Marriott if you want, or you could be James Crane, if that's okay. First of all, welcome, Margaret. It might be helpful to the board if you just explain what your role is and how you connect.
Yes, I'm the chair of the safeguarding adults board and have been for the last 5 years now. That does mean that...
Would you say that's longer than some councillors?
The person who's the real driver of all of this is Emma Coleman, who's...
Come and join us, Emma. You're always at risk of getting to speak if you do. That's the only point.
Emma's... about 12 months ago, he will be calling to the Safeguarding Adults Board. I think it's important to be introduced, but she does do most of the linking and management of entering meetings, getting the policies in place, linking with the local Safeguarding Adults Board on mainland, and ensuring that we do all the deliver what we said.
Okay, thank you.
I don't want to say too much because you've had a very full report and run us a public work in 2018 and 2019. The report also highlights some of the issues moving forward, and I'm happy to take questions. But I do want to just highlight three aspects of the report. One is the establishment of the multi-agency risk management meetings. The multi-agency safeguarding triage meetings. Multi-agency safeguarding triage has proved to be quite important in acting as a kind of screening body to ensure that kind of the referrals that are made eventually to for Section 42 inquiry are first looked at by this multi-agency safeguarding triage. I'm struggling because there is a match on the mainland, that's what they are calling the mainland. We have a particular version of that for the Isle of Wight because the police between, but from the start, the police in Hampshire have struggled to have capacity to service the multi-agency safeguarding triage on the island and to ensure that there is some kind of consistency about their presence. At those meetings. That has been resolved since May of this year. The police have given a commitment that they will service, and this will remain a priority for them, and they will continue to offer support. That's been quite important. We have seen cases come to the mast and be deferred to other kinds of plans, more effective plans. And more effective support being offered through without going through to the safeguarding adults team. And that's been really important to something. The health trust, the adults in social care and police are all involved in that triage. Health trust have struggled to be there physically, but are there virtually at the moment. It seems to be working, and it seems to be effective, and it will be part of any reshaping of our social care's work on safeguarding in the future. Multi-agency risk management meetings are where a single agency is dealing with an individual who is deemed to be at risk, and that they feel that they can no longer, that the risk is raised to such a serious level that on their own, so they need to involve other agencies. They can then convene a meeting with those agencies to ensure that the case is looked at in the mind and that if there's other things that other agencies can deliver to that individual, then that is done in the lead. That again does help it means that we don't have inappropriate referrals onto the space of government team. and then having to be bounced back to different agencies. So they're really, it's a really important development this year. It is proving difficult for some of the non-statutory agencies to convene those meetings. They're finding that they're not able to get statutory agencies to them in the way that if it was convened by a statutory agency, that wouldn't have been a problem. So in response to that, we are proposing to appoint in the short term for 12 months a part-time multi-agency risk management coordinator who can help those agencies convene those meetings and support development. We've also had a thresholds document published for agencies, and you will know because I referred to adults and social care. We've told you that there's an issue about the conversion of the families to safeguard adults and to inquiries, to section 42 inquiries. That conversion rate last year was about 25 to 30%, which means that an awful lot of work is done in looking into cases that actually don't result in any inquiries in the engagement of the bodies. The thresholds document is to help practitioners across the field who are working with vulnerable adults to understand when to refer those cases to the use of vulnerable adults. It's relatively new, but we have been there's been a lot of effort being put in by partners to ensure that people understand policy, that they understand the guidance, that they get training on that. And it is beginning to show dividends in terms of the conversion rates that the adult social care are seeing in relation to the safeguard families. You know, they have now increased to about 40%. So it might be at the national average. We want to do that, I suggest. Both the thresholds work and the multi-agency risk management work on the island attract attention nationally and have we taken a lead in the region before local safeguarding adults was in delivering and promoting that work. So I think it's something that the island should be covering. I just wanted to mention this.
So I've got two questions. One was the funding for the coordinator post. Is that something that is worked through? How is that worked through?
Sorry.
The new coordinator post.
It is going to be attached to Emma's team, initially but managed through one of the senior social workers in the adult social care service. And we'll be not doing the work for people, but helping them to undertake that.
And in the report itself, I know that there's a couple of bits of data which aren't able to March, April 18 to March 19, the first couple of pages, but I'm assuming that the data that's contained in the main body of the report covers that period up to March 2019.
Yes, it does.
Because you're obviously working behind a little bit. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Okay. Any questions from members? Zonia?
Try again.
They're all off, so do you want to swap mics?
Yeah, there's one there that is working. They were switched on, I suspect the battery might.
Yeah. Okay, I have a question, or probably a suggestion, related to items on page C6. Section 3, cases reviewed and lessons learned. It is useful to have the overview of the cases there. But my question is whether it is covered sufficiently, because learning the lesson doesn't necessarily mean that action is taken. And I think it might be useful to have maybe just one sentence to say, this is what we have done. Because each one of those cases are quite significant. Thank you.
So just clarifying that, you're liking the fact there are case examples, a line to explain the action taken as a result of the case example would be helpful information. Are you okay with that?
Yes, I'm fine with that. You don't want to make too lengthy, but your point is, for example, in one of the cases where it was a chaotic lifestyle, an awful lot of work has now been done to which we were talking about the person who was doing earlier about trying to improve the response of all the agencies involved, to those who have alcohol, substance issues, problems, business.
Thank you. And doing that won't compromise the confidentiality aspect, which is obviously important.
No, we should be. Well, in all cases, we have action plans which don't get published alongside the review. And those are followed up by the Safeguarding Adults Review Committee and monitored to ensure that some of those actions are taking place in the review.
Okay, cool.
This is actually much worse rather awkward. I'm thinking in terms of people or families that are known to the safeguarding team who may become involved in public life. I'm still governor and I have to be DBS check to do that. If, for example, you're a parish councillor, you don't have to be. And increasingly, parish councillors are getting involved in youth services. Is there any way that the parish council could be made aware of anyone who may be a member of that council being known to safeguarding
the DBS house?
Yes, that's for vulnerable adults, I think we could. I mean, I'm just trying to complete that question here. We're about to launch into some work on training and improving the awareness of the voluntary community sector about adult safeguarding. We could think about whether parish councils could be included in that work. The people who are undertaking that work for us are People Together and Health Watch. And Health Watch is in a good position to do this.
So just dealing with that point, Mary, there probably could be two levels. I mean, generally parish councillors engagement, children and other adults and everybody at all sorts of events and things. I don't think we're quite talking about that, but there are some very specialist areas where it might be a particular parish councillor has an above role, and I actually can't see why we couldn't have some facility where they could get their DBS check. I think I've had five in different roles I've had, so that would be useful. I'm going to come over to Claire in a moment. So I think Michael was next, then Claire.
I know that Paul and I, because we actually go into different areas, as you can imagine, Paul, with his role, my role, we are in harness DBS checked. A lot of parish councillors and town councillors won't actually, they go into meetings, but they're not going into the types of situation. If you was a school governor, then you would be DBS checked. But the DBS check really is for people who are going into a situation that would be on one-to-one. It really does worry me that we have this piece of paper that's called the DBS, and we actually made it by workers, by getting everybody across in the wrong direction to actually have a DBS check. They need to be relevant for the work that the person is doing. So unless I can put said that someone is working on vulnerable and in a situation that they're dealing with children, then really isn't relevant. I don't want to get into the debate now about DBS checks, but I also want to make sure the DBSs are kept as being DBS and worth for the roles that people are actually.
So I think what we can do there is we could send
It wasn't so much about the DBS debate, but as Margaret was just talking about this new MARM role and multi-agency risk management meetings, those would be for cases that perhaps are not at Section 42 threshold. They may be falling through gaps in the system. And it may be something that actually the training that we need to give to parish councils is about how they can look at that MARM process and get those professionals involved in that case, rather than perhaps taking on something alone and making sure they've got relevant checks. It's probably about learning about that process, because anybody can call an MARM. And that might be something that perhaps
so just thinking on the training side, it sounds like a positive thing that town and parish councils would appreciate. We have, as a council, various connections with the town and parish councils, both through individual town and parish council meetings and a collective meeting we have here. we could build that into the agenda, depending on how you decide you'd like to do that training. Obviously our resources are limited, but it might be useful over the year to give an informative session on this. Certainly my experience of the collective town parish councils, they quite like. So we've had the island plan presentation, we've had different things. I think Amanda's point is very well made. Maybe we can do a short, sharp presentation, so training element for it. In relation to DBS check, to my recollection, I may be wrong, if there is a particular body, let's say a youth group, there is a duty on them to make sure that their staff accessing children are DBS checked. I think that's correct. So actually there may not be the risk so much. But we can circulate advice on that, I think. And I agree with Claire's point that, you know, if you have everybody with it, it demeans the value, because everybody will then just have got DBS. Actually, they're very role-specific as well.
They're role-specific and they're time-specific.
Yeah,
they
just, yeah.
There's a danger of relying on DBS alone, and that would be a risk. I mean, they're important, and they're actually a lot easier to get now because they're all online, they're slightly cheaper.
Yes. Okay, yeah, that's true. Any other points on Michael? Sorry. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Just one or two points. Just on the last one, I welcome that because I think more and more the parish and councils are actually funding more social care. That's definitely happening in Rye. And I think they've been conserved in Rye by a number of councillors. Even though we are granting in question by the White Council another organisation around Community Connectors, there has been concerns that we are monitoring and evaluating the project. So safeguard is an extremely important part of it. In fact, we've taken out insurance cover in that regard and some of we've been quite concerned about that. And so I do think that perhaps now people are now moving into being the grant funder or the direct provider of integrated youth services, of sort of social welfare things. So that's a new development. I think we need to be very welcome of that.
Sorry, just dealing with that point. So I think you can pick that up in two ways. With our cabinet on the road, which we're going to do again this year, after which we normally have a meeting with town and parish councils privately, I think we can put that one into the agenda as a topic. That's a good idea.
Yeah, and also, sorry, the safeguard is really, really important. Yep. My other particular point was to pick up your points about thresholds, and which were non-statutory, whereas which is the voluntary sector, and I'm including parish and town councils within that, that are more and more having to be either first port of call or the organisation that people are referred to. You know, there's this green, amber, red kind of system of referral, and I think that there needs to be much more guidance and training within the voluntary sector. I mean, things like the mini chests, for instance, you've got 15 of those, and they are now being referred, particularly older men who are vulnerable, that are being in crisis, and that provides good support. The difficulty that they're having, and a number of organisations are referring back up the line when they're suddenly faced with suicidal ideation, etc. How do they quickly get? And they're not necessarily getting that response. So I think I just wanted to make sure that is an area we really look at, that the non-statutory organisations are actually listened to when they are actually saying this person is in a real crisis for safeguarding issues here. That because I'm definitely getting people, particularly the smaller voluntary sector organisations, the ones that deal with cancer, you know, the smaller groups really get very distressed when they ring up a crisis line or whatever and basically tell this person, "I'm going to meet the threshold, it's your problem." My question was to come, was to get reinforcement on what was actually said about that
aspect. So what I'm going to suggest, the way we can move forward on this way, could you provide the board with an outline of your training programme? If you could provide the board with an outline of the programme that the Safeguarding Board provides, that's the what, and then how you do it, and then if there are any gaps that can be pushed forward, the men and sheds could be something that
would
be...
I'll use that as an example.
Yeah, no, I know, realise that. So I think if we could do that, but there's not a rush on that, but if we could just have that, it would be quite useful to understand.
We'll have that probably for September, because we start at Sunday school training with the voluntary sector, and we've had about 30 more responses across the world.
So can you take this outside the meeting and speak with Michael as the rep and things?
Yeah, we do. And the starting subject will continue to the same.
Okay. Lovely for that, thank you. Claire?
Having looked at some reviews, I have to say thank you so much. I'm a bicultural meeting, so you're a stunning chair. And Emma has been just like a breath of fresh air. She's so hardworking. She's been really good at marketing and different training and stuff like that. My question is how is the relationship at the moment with the foreigner? Has that improved recently?
Yes, as the council will know, we did have some of the coroner's office. The coroner was expecting us to provide her with one of the reviews that she was interested in going through her court. That hasn't always been possible. The time scale for reducing the purpose of the doing these reviews is very different from the purpose of the coroner's court. We had our summons and we had a discussion quite a lot at fairly short notice about particular this. And in the light of that, we had a meeting and tried to set up work with the coroner's office to try and explain what has all this and how that cannot provide some of the expectations. I think that's working because we've not heard anything negative since then, and we're not having so many demands on the time since then.
Managing the coroner's expectations are always a challenge at times, but I hope to have a meeting with the coroner soon in relation to some other matters that actually have come up through the full council. So I'll take that point on board and have a general liaison on that. So that'll deal with that. Thanks for that, Claire. Miss what you said. What are you guys for feeding in the pot?
Thank you. So one of the things I want to know is I know that we're having involved in some of the case reviews and stuff like that. The coroner sometimes has delayed your very thorough and very good report into situations that have happened, and I think having to wait a long time as a family to get that report can be quite distressing. Having those reports gone out to families now and not for any of them still being delayed.
We still have had a long delay on one of the cases, and as far as I'm aware, that still hasn't been resolved. The family, we tried to make it take contact for quite 6-7 months with the family, and we have, and I think if they contact somebody, we will have a full discussion with them, but I'm not sure we're still maintaining that contact.
Okay, so is there anything we can do to help them out being board chair and help them board to prompt the coroner and say, you've been made aware of this, could you work towards letting the family know that
report? I think the date has now been set for the coroner's hearing in that case, so that should be resolved. The issue with the coroner was also the other way around, that she was expecting us to finish the reports in time for her coroner's court hearing. And that just wasn't really impossible because we were trying to get we were concerned about the quality of the report and we wanted to have it. Grant purposes in a second way. That was resolved through the summons because that was explained in the court.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can I summarise, if any members of the board have any points, issues or challenges or thoughts they would like you to raise in the coroner, if you could feed them through to Brian and South, I'll certainly take them up. John, if I take any comments you've got, and then I'll just want to summarise way forward. Sorry, Michael.
I just wanted to emphasise support for Claire, because I was actually going to bring those up in the questions. So I'm glad that they have. So I just want to strengthen
I'm just getting that note of support.
Strengthen that we actually, you know, the issue with the court comes up, particularly from families, a lot. And I do think that a lot of families have a lot of distress because of what I described, the friction, right? And delays. And I think we do need to notice it, and we do need to have. I'm glad you are having a meeting with the coroner, because I had contacted a number of families that are in absolute despair over the delay or something.
Chief Exec just offered to accompany me to meet the coroner, so that's very nice. Amanda.
Hi, not particularly about the coroner, and obviously sending the final reports to families is incredibly important, I get that. From a health and wellbeing point of view, the purpose of those is case reviews, I would say bottom reviews, answer the lessons learned. So I just, as the board, want to ask for reassurance that the action plans which sit alongside those don't discontinue whilst we're waiting for the coroner to make a decision. Are they going forward, and are those lessons being learned, and are measures being put in place?
You did not wait for the coroner in order to implement the action plans.
Okay, I'm going to move on from this item. Sorry, John, just want to speak here. You're the last speaker.
Sorry, thank you, Chairman. Just looking at the numbers and data on C19 to C20, and Margaret, do you have any concern that the initial referrals to safeguarding are dropping, but the number of Section 42 inquiries are increasing? I mean, it seems to me that, you know, in a classic case of pilots and black boxes, it's expected to be declared if you miss and we can have a close look at it, but should we have any concern around those numbers?
I don't think so. I think there is an increasing awareness of white safeguarding across the piece, and that's going to result in some cases that may not have rightly been set forward to the safeguarding analyst as an inquiry. Those numbers increasing because people have become more aware. At the same time, we do seem to be stopping the inappropriate effects, or beginning to stop as inappropriate. So I don't think, I'll look into it a bit more in terms of getting answers from our adult social care colleagues, but yes, I think there is an issue.
So just my, if I may interpret that back to you, so I think if I hear what you're saying is that the numbers have gone down because we've done an educational process and we've helped people to understand what safeguarding referral is. But we've actually had more inquiries as we're getting better quality of referral, and therefore we're able to investigate it.
The numbers
have
gone down, it's about the conversion rate. So it's not by absolute numbers have gone down, it's by being having more appropriate referrals with safeguarding analysts. The issue about awareness and raising does mean that we're likely to have more of those.
Okay, I'll move on from here. I just want to make 2 points. One is the style of this board. This is not a council structured board. It has partners from across the piece, and we want to create a degree of informality but within a framework that we can always move forward. It's always mindful of the clock. Brian and I have respectively been to Hampshire's Health and Wellbeing Board and Southampton's Health and Wellbeing Board, and following his feedback to me and my observation of Southampton, I'm happy that we're doing a fine job compared with some. I'll be careful to use my words here. So there's some interesting things going on elsewhere, but I think we have got a very, it's probably typical of the island, we are, in my view, doing things in a very inclusive way. Can you go to that one?
Yes, I'm an attendant of the Health and Wellbeing Board in Hampshire a couple of months ago. I think following advice of the same comments, I think it was very well organised meeting. I thought it was interesting over there, there was a lot of concerns over the environment pollution and how we address that. I think that's something I've noticed within the Health and Wellbeing Board, looking back through the previous meetings. That's something we've arranged to look at in the future when it becomes such a public health concern. But no, I don't think there's anything we came back thinking that we've started with that.
And probably close on that point, last night the council passed a motion related to climate emergency, climate change, and some actions that sit below that, including the formation of an action plan, will be costed and then brought through the committee of the regen, that's the regen committee. So I'll make sure that this board gets an update on the progress of that. I'm sure the media will update you, but if you want some factual information, I'll make sure that that is received. Has St. Michael proceeded part of that motion? But we won't draw time on it, Michael, if we can move on, because we're running out of time on the agenda.
No, it was just a link on to what you said. I attended the National Conference on Scrutiny of Health, which included about health and wellbeing boards, and had leaders of the NHS, the clinical, about the importance of scrutiny and health and the relationship of health scrutiny and health and wellbeing boards. I will actually write something about the past actually reported at the next meeting, but I actually think there's some really good developments within that, particularly about getting more voices, a lot about increasing the voice of health watch and the voices of actual people within the system. That's coming from
there. Okay, thank you for that. And obviously John's here as chair of our health and social care scrutiny. Right, I'm going to move on to item